Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. Yes, we made it through another week. Congratulations to us. And I'm thrilled to have a true rock star CMO, and I don't use that lightly, today to chat all things marketing with Grant. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Evan?
I'm living the dream, but thanks so much for being here. Followed each other on social media for some time, and I've always been intrigued by you and your work. Before we dive in with lots of questions, maybe introduce yourself, a little bit about your background and your roles, both at BuildTrust and the CMO collective collaboration that you founded so many years ago.
Yeah, so Grant Johnson, I've been a B2B tech vet for my whole career. I'm a five-time CMO. And I am just passionate about marketing, passionate about building businesses and helping others succeed. That's why I got involved in the CMO Collaborative. In fact, I have a site called CMO Mentor, cmomentor.com, where I provide best practices advice for CMOs and aspiring CMOs, how to get there faster. And BuildTrust, we help companies get paid faster. Speaking of faster, we handle everything from order to cash for B2B companies. And we don't sell to consumers, so we're purely B2B, and we help everything with automating financial processes, especially in taking the order, generating electronic invoices, taking payments, and getting paid so you can run your business better.
I love that. What an elevator pitch. I love getting paid in general. So
I think we
good stuff. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, but maybe talk a little bit about your marketing experience. In particular, it's, to me, it's sort of the best of times, the worst of times story with marketing and social and digital. So many opportunities, so many challenges. Where do you start? Where do you start when you think about growth and focus and where to invest time, effort, energy, dollars? Maybe give us a bit of your philosophy, if you would, around that.
Yeah, I think the definition of marketing for B2B vets, B2B tech folks especially, is about setting expectations of what marketing can do, because it's probably the most subjective of the various functions within a business. Like, you need your code without errors, or you balance the books precisely, but marketing is very subjective. So what I do is when I'm starting a company at the beginning of each year, I align with the rest of the executive team. What are our key goals? We have various objectives we're trying to achieve. We're going to grow revenue. We're going to increase net retention, a great one for SaaS companies. We're going to lower the cost per customer acquired. We're going to increase the speed to which we can resolve any issues, to have great support, net promoter scores. And then I think about with the team I have, the budget I have, how can I best drive growth, support these key objectives? I'll say, for example, that there's something like, hey, we're going to migrate from X platform to Y platform. That's a pretty technical thing. It might have to do with some, cloud. I can't really help that. But almost everything else from, go-to-market, employee engagement, driving our presence in the marketplace, strategic communications like PR and analyst relations and social, as you said, and, digital savvy, all these things we can really help in marketing. So I sort of prioritize and align marketing objectives to company objectives, team objectives to marketing objectives, individual objectives to team objectives. And so people have, most companies these days have MBOs, whether you're bonusing them or not, you're sort of tracking management by objective. And everything's, in my mind, is very metrics driven. You still need the great creative breakthroughs. I mean, we'll talk about brand at some point and what I came up with at a number of companies that I think makes a difference. You can't just calculate, there's those intangibles, but that's the general approach to whether it's the first 90 days or the, planning for the new fiscal year.
Love it. Well, that's a very succinct summary of your philosophy there. The other thing that comes across in your work and your writing is your passion for team work, for team development, which everyone pays lip service to, but is harder to do in real life. Terms of helping your team members grow and succeed and nurture their passions and mentor and all that good stuff. Maybe talk about that. Any advice or effective ways folks can be better at developing their teams?
Yeah, I think you just have to fundamentally care about people and their well-being. I think COVID changed the world, right? I've always been driven. You don't get to head of any function without being driven. I get that. But I wasn't always as empathetic as I feel I am today. Now, my kids are, my number one focus, but, on my team, I try to connect with everybody individually, whether they're direct report, one or two levels, on a regular basis. Hey, how are you doing? I remember during COVID, like, are you finding, work-life balance? Are you going crazy, not going to the office? Are you going crazy with roommates surrounding you, trying to do Zoom calls? How are you feeling, right? If you're taking the vaccine or not, that's your choice. But, so I think that's really key. And then trying to take an interest in what drives that particular person. People have asked me, your management style. Well, if you're in trouble and your team's not performing, you're going to get a lot of my attention. If you're knocking it out of the park, I'll just say, go faster, keep going, right? Keep swinging, whatever it is, right? But I think you have to care about people. They have to sense that. If people have a good bullshit meter, like, are you genuine? I don't know how to be anything other than what you see is what you get, authentic. And I think people sort of, they like that. There's no pretense. Sometimes early in your career, you're trying to prove something. If you can be yourself, there's nobody else like you. That's my best advice. And then you put together a plan for that individual to how they can grow. And really, people will come to me telling me, like, Chris, I want to be promoted. I said, really? What makes you think that? And I said, well, I've spent this amount of time. I said, well, why don't we co-create? You tell me what you can do. I'll give you guidance. I'll get feedback. And together, we'll look at the milestones. And by the time you're ready to be promoted, people will think I'm stupid if I don't promote you because you've been exceeding all the metrics or expectations. So I think a lot of times early in somebody's career, and I'm not going to say whether, you're boomer or, you're X or Y, or, Gen Z, it doesn't really matter. You have to have objective evidence that you've made the next leap. And, it's hard for some people to hear that initially, but generally people come around to it and you can get to that end goal with a good plan and solid, consistent execution.
I love that. Well, you started with a bit of the warm and fuzzy feel good and right to the execution side. Speaking of which, I know from your bio, you've helped many companies double their revenue. Not exactly an easy proposition to do multiple times. So what's your strategy there? I wish it were that simple to summarize in a minute or two, but you must have some unique insights.
I wish it were too. Look, first of all, I've been fortunate. I think I've turned down some opportunities that were smart in retrospect. So I've picked good opportunities. I have a 7-point criteria. We'll go into another time. But in general, you're sort of thinking about the market, the management team, the culture, the customer base, and opportunities and all that. And how doubled again as an organization, and it's not necessarily double overnight. Sometimes it's taken a couple years, sometimes it's taken 4 years. Pegasystems doubled, Kofax doubled, Silence doubled, and Burst doubled. Yeah, so I've had a few doubles and some have taken longer than others, but it's really determining what are the growth levers. And sometimes it's organic, sometimes it's through M&A, and many times it's a combination of both. And where can we compete most effectively? So in some cases, it's expand the product line. Other cases, go into new geographies. Other cases, it's really increase the cross-sell, which is something that was quite successful at Inburst. We doubled in the first year we did cross-sell. We doubled again. And at that point, the math got harder, so we only went up by 50% the third year. But as the base gets bigger, it's harder to double. But I think, stay in the course, measuring, being agile. I love, obviously, all the tools that are at the disposal of a modern CMO, the Gen AI and the tech stack, and everybody's adding, more automation and insights to their application. So you measure everything and you put gas where it's working and you stop doing things that don't work. And then ultimately you can increase the efficiency of both your team and the dollars that you put to invest and, work cross-functionally. Sometimes we're growing channel partners versus direct market. Other times we're growing one vertical versus, mid-market. So I think it's a combination. I wish it was a one-minute equation. It's a lot of hard work. But having the right company with the right team, it's a good start.
Well said. The other thing you've seen quite a bit of are mergers and acquisitions. And we've all seen them in our careers, some good, some go sideways for other reasons. What's your take on making acquisitions work before, during, after, and the impact on culture and disruption and change, which is never easy?
I've got a couple of great examples for you. But first of all, I think that you absolutely should be, you know, this due diligence, and you're looking before, you're meeting the people, you're getting the feel for it, you're looking at, you know, what are the issues that you're going to have to inherit and deal with. But I'll give you an example where it worked and, you know, where it didn't work and why culture is just paramount. So we had acquired a company when I was at Kofax. They were called Kapow. And they're still part of Kofax, whatever Kofax has now changed their name since I left. I won't go there. But I flew up to the Bay Area. We acquired the company, and you know, we had a blue logo, and they had a purple logo. And you know, they said, "Look, I don't want to be part of this Kofax culture." I said, "Yeah, but we're growing, and you know, we're investing in you, and this product's going to help us." And not. I want to go back to a startup. So there was nothing I could do. There was nothing the company could do. I mean, I personally, my third day on the job, I flew up to this company we just acquired to try to convince them. So it's not going to always work. So you got to make sure the culture, like, you know, who are the influencers? You know, what's the founder going to do? You know, what were people's career paths? Did they all just join, or they've been there 5 years or cashing out? You got to understand that part, because if you're really buying the intellectual property and the people walk off the door. So that's the case where it didn't work. Another case, we merged with Perceptive out of Kansas City, and we were based in Irvine, California, when I was at Kofax. And you know, I met with the team. There's a lot of trepidations, like everything's going to be decided from California. We've lost our autonomy. We'll have no influence. So I actually was sort of a case study where I said, you know what? I'm going to just rebalance the team. So this person in Kansas City manages this person in Irvine. We had a Sweden. You know, this person in Irvine manages this person in Sweden. This person in Sweden manages this person in Kansas City, whatever. We sort of blended the team. And so we were all one team with one common goal, to grow the collective businesses. And I had very little attrition. I think if I just sat there, this is back when you used to go to offices, right? If I just sat there on the speakerphone and said, "Here's what we're going to do, guys, let's go," they would have ran screaming to the door. But instead it worked out, and I'm still in contact with a lot of those folks. In fact, I've mentored 15 CMOs, and one of those was, she was on the fence at the time. And that was a positive culture experience. But you're absolutely right. You need all the due diligence, the financial savvy, but the people, you got to bring them along, and you know what, they want to be part of the go forward business. Otherwise, you know, you want to determine that fast, so your fence sitters can really hurt you.
Great point. Yeah, participation is key. You know, this is a question I ask a lot of people with so many areas in marketing now to focus on. So many platforms, niches, social, you know, I'm on about 12 different platforms right now. Does your team decide where to invest your, not just money, but time, effort, energy for optimal growth?
Yeah, it's a constant challenge. I've got about 40 folks on the marketing team, you know, about the right size for a company, you know, with our revenue. And I've always leaned heavily into digital. I was fortunate early in my career when my first CMO gig at Pegasys from 09 to 13, and things were just kind of taken off. I had peers that were at HubSpot and, you know, Eloqua and, you know, Marketo and so forth. So, you know, we're kind of pushing the envelope with each other. And now it's sort of like it's given that you've got to be digital and more digital with Gen AI than ever before. We try to have a good marketing mix because we sell to, you know, a B2B is considered purchase. There's a buyer committee. There's multiple people at different levels, and you want to engage them. Some prefer to watch your short content, what I call snackable, you know, content videos. Some might read one of your white papers. There's no one way. Some will come to the webinar, watch it on demand, or watch it live. Come to an event, want to, you know, press, you know, shake hands and so forth. So you have to have the right mix. I do lean more towards what I can measure and what I can scale faster. Like I don't think I can add 10x events and get the same pipeline, but certainly I can add 10x a variety of digital tactics. And we do all the usual things. You know, we do content syndication, SEO, and search engine advertising, and retargeting, and nurture streams. And so we just kind of balance all that. And then I encourage the team to experiment. Last year, I had the team, my director of content marketing led this. We did 400 Gen AI experiments, and we've now adopted 15. Because everybody can automate some part of the job. Yeah, sure, content writing is a lot easier than graphic design or maybe marketing operations. But there's new tools all the time. It's a great time to be in marketing. So I think you just have to maintain the balance. And I put my energy where I think it needs the most help or where I have the most interest. And so that's kind of how I sort of balance my and my team's time.
Well said. Well, that's a great model for all of us out here. And speaking of AI and Gen AI, I mean, I feel in the last year I've gone from my little team of three to having an AI virtual team of 10 based on all the tools and the new tech stack I'm using. And it's phenomenal. I can't believe how much my life has changed personally, professionally. But in a bigger organization, what do you think, you know, a marketing leader's job will be now in this new world of AI, Gen AI moving forward?
Yeah, I've always been one, you have to embrace the technology and you have to figure out where it fits in the overall equation. And it can supplement, augment what you're doing. And so I've had my team always try new things, and sometimes they'll come to me and say, hey, we were using this, but this is better. Can we swap? Well, yeah, as long as it's cost neutral or maybe even save money and find a better tool. So we look at all our vendors' roadmaps and where they're adding AI. So whether it's our chat or our marketing automation or ABM platform or web technology, and you look at what they're adding, what we can take advantage of, and then make sure we don't break something when you add something. That's always something when you've got a tech stack and you're connected to systems of record like Salesforce, you got to be careful that one change doesn't cause another problem. But I tend to hire people that have intellectual curiosity as well and want to continue improving, right? Because we're in a competitive market, it's a dynamic market, and we've got to continue to raise our game. And so let's leverage technology where possible. We can only work so many hours, and I'm a big believer in work-life balance. You know, come to work excited on Monday, not exhausted. So you do need to take time.
well said. So you've been involved in all aspects of the marketing game, but it's different B2B, but also marketing to small businesses, mid-size, large global enterprises, very different propositions these days. You know, maybe talk about the challenges of each of those, you know, categories. And are you currently at Billtrust, for example, serving all those different size businesses as well?
Yeah, we're currently not serving small business. I've done that. I've done B2C, but I ran Norton brand worldwide. Back when they had packaging and you could buy a store downloading software, SaaS, you know.
When you used to buy software, shrink wrap. Wow, what a
game. Gray hair to prove that. We remember those crazy days. And I was part of the yellow box team for Santa. But anyway, yeah, so small business Emburse, we had the Emburse card. They had that. And so anybody could get, you know, card to give you cash back and manage your expenses 2-for-1. A lot of other companies do that, like, you know, a Brex, for example. And so we don't do that. We have because we're getting helping companies get paid faster, we're managing hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of invoices. Small businesses, they're not going to generate enough to where they, it doesn't mean they shouldn't, you know, digitize and be, but they're not the best fit for our capability, our broad platform. We call it unified accounts receivable, unified AR. And so for us, the corporate or mid-market and enterprise, what we try to do is, determine what the key buying criteria would be. And we really start by selling the business value. A lot of companies call it the as is and the to be. So we say, look, here's the problem you're trying to solve. If once we work together, because it takes people, process, and technology, here's the outcomes you can achieve, the ROI, you know, payback period, wherever it might be. And we find that if we make the business value tangible and the prospect agrees, it's not our calculation, they have to use their own numbers. And then we get a lot of great case studies where we show that we've dramatically shortened the day sales outstanding. We've improved, you know, time it takes to lower the days. And we have a days to pay index that we've aggregated billions of dollars of payments data that we manage. And we can tell every vertical, every segment, like, are you getting paid faster or slower? And if you're getting paid slower, hey, we can help you get paid faster with our technology. So you have to approach it, you know, uniquely to that segment and in many cases to that vertical so that it resonates. People like to buy from companies who have sold to people they know, you know, in their field. And so the peer influence and our community and our reference program and our, you know, Billtrust Insight that we're doing in April and in Phoenix, Arizona, all these things make a difference to try to influence the buyer to consider us and the customer to stay with us, in fact, hopefully grow over time.
Nice. Great strategy. So beyond Billtrust, talk about the CMO collaborative that you founded and built and nurtured into quite an interesting organization. What's the ongoing mission and how can folks participate?
Yeah, well, what they, there's chapters. CMO Collaborative is a website. There's, I think, 24 chapters. In fact, I'm driving after this call to LA. I'm in Southern California, so there's LA, Orange County, and San Diego. It's just big metropolis, right? And we have an in-person luncheon meeting. And there's a lot of virtual teams. But one of the reasons, there was something called the CMO Club, Salesforce bought them, then they shut it down. And so the CMO Collaborative was founded. And I'm not a co-founder of CMO Collaborative. I'm just the co-founder of the LA chapter, right? So LAOC and CMO said, look, I'll help get this thing rolling. I've been doing it for a decade. And so the fundamental is you've got each other's backs. We're helping each other with best practices. We have monthly expert webinars on how to use Gen AI, how to grow your career, how to influence the C-suite. And you can just have pick up the phone, private conversations. Because like most CMOs, I can't go to the CEO and say, I'm stuck. Well, I could. And he would appreciate the fact that I was honest, but he wouldn't be able to probably help me brainstorm. But how about, let me just, you know, get a couple CMOs on a Zoom or Teams call and say, hey, what have you done here? Plus, you know, you can just set up one-on-ones and you've got each other's back. You're helping each other grow and achieve your goals. And it's good to have that, you know, trusted peer in your network, because you can't go it alone. And that's what the CMO Collaborative, we're collaborating together for the greater good.
I love that. And I love peer groups. And it sounds like it's a real community versus, you know, lots of masterminds. People want to charge you money or charge you to be a coach or mentor. Not always the best option. Well, so excited. You got your big event coming up in Phoenix at Build Trust. What else are you excited about over the next couple months? What's on your radar personally, professionally?
Yeah, otherwise? Well, personally, and thanks for asking, I am going to my fourth straight Nationals. 32 people, a tennis player in Orlando. Wow. I just play clay again, which is great because I'm not super fast, but I'm super consistent. And they do an age group, you know, 18, 30, 50, whatever. And so I'm at a 4.0. And so I'm training for that. I've got a lot of tennis buddies. And then I'm going to go watch semis tomorrow in the desert, Indian Wells, if you're a tennis fan. So that's the personal stuff. And by next year, my third kid goes off to college. So you've got the whole story there. Professionally, I'm excited about getting us to doubling, right? I've only been here a year. It didn't happen overnight. And we've got a good team. We've got a lot of good strategies and product. And, you know, we've just got the overall mindset. How can we get better every day? And so I think that's what I'm excited about. Obviously, our customer conference, we called it Inside the Row. We went to four cities. We had kind of these 50-person gatherings instead of a multi-100-person gathering. But we want to do the bigger conference, the bigger stage, you know, some keynote speakers. We're excited about that. So, yeah, it's a combination of those two things. Never a dull moment, but every once in a while, time to take a breath.
Oh, I love it. Well, you really appreciate your passion and your insights. And it was fun just chatting with the audience here for a few minutes. Reach out and connect with Grant on LinkedIn. He's prolific and has just tons of great insights and comments. And thanks, everyone, for watching. Appreciate your likes, shares, as always. Thanks, Grant.
My pleasure. Have a great rest of the day.
You too. Take care, everyone.